Hi, this is James Devine, and I am an educator who has come out of the trenches. Listen in as my friend and colleague Dana Goodyear shares stories and tips from other educators who have come out of the trenches.
Welcome to the Out of the Trenches podcast. This is Dana Goodyear. Thanks for listening.
My next guest is Terrence Tong. Terrence has taught in Canada, Kuwait, and South Korea. He is an aspiring leader with an extensive teacher and leadership experience, seeking the next level learning community to serve. He aims to serve the learning community, provide diverse opportunities for students, and engage parents as learning partners. This is his 22nd year teaching, and he is currently teaching in Seoul, South Korea. Welcome to the podcast, Terrence.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Dana. Thank you so much. I really appreciate the opportunity to chat a little bit with you and to connect with your audience.
Great. Well, tell me about a time you were in the trenches and managed to crawl out.
Wow. You know what? I think that I'll have to go back to my early days in education. You know, it's I don't want to make it sound all doom and gloom, you know, but certainly I think it was what led me to international teaching in the first place. I followed a very traditional route, if you will. You know, I went from, you know, high school to college to working right away. There's no gap years in between. I didn't, you know, backpack in Europe for a semester or anything like that. And then got to a point about 5 or 6 years in where it's like, yeah, I'm getting pretty good at this. You know, I felt like, okay, I've managed the classroom piece and then the pedagogy piece, the curriculum piece, and I was getting involved in the school and all that. But, you know, and by looks around, I saw, you know, colleagues, I saw friends that were, you know, getting settled, right? You know, buying a house, having a mortgage, and starting to have kids and whatnot. And then I looked around, I was like, I don't know if that's what I want in my life right now. And, you know, as cliche as it sounds, you know, turning 30 was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back. And, you know, if your audience, you know, I'm sure your audience can do the math and figure out how old I am now. I kind of, you know, said to myself, okay, you know what, if I don't do it now, I'll never do this. And I made a decision to go overseas. And that's something that I'm so grateful for to this day. I'm so grateful that, you know, and a little bit, and I'm proud of myself too for you know, taking that leap and trusting myself and say, hey, you know what, you know, you got this, you know, let's go overseas, let's give this a try. At that point, you know, my first school, it was an initial 1 year contract. So worst case scenario, it's 10 months, you know, of your career, you know, but it could turn into something better. And so here we are, you know, 16 years later, and I'm still, you know, working internationally. So certainly it's, you know, I don't want to give your audience the sense that I was unhappy at home. I didn't enjoy working in teaching in Toronto, Canada. That's certainly not the case, but I just wanted something different for myself. And I saw international teaching as an opportunity to do so.
And so you told me in the pre-chat you first went to Kuwait before you moved to Seoul. So that was maybe kind of a little bit rougher as a transition from Canada than Korea. So how was life different, kind of, and just teaching in general and working with colleagues and students in both of those countries?
Kuwait, you know, for all its beauty and the benefits the country, you know, provides, certainly was not a soft landing spot, you know, as a first time international teacher. Certainly, you know, growing up in suburbia, Toronto, you know, I was sheltered from a lot of things that, you know, I just didn't know. I was, you know, perhaps part of it is it's just me being ignorant or not learning a little bit more than I should have. By going to, you know, a Muslim country, going to a country where, you know, it's dry, there's no alcohol, there's no pork, right? You hear the call of prayer 5 times a day, right? You know, there's social, cultural things that, you know, that are expected there that, you know, are not expected anywhere else in the world. So that was a very steep learning curve, But, you know, once again, I was super grateful for that, learning opportunity. And, you know, the 8 years in Kuwait are, you know, have been a highlight in my life right now. And certainly, both professionally and personally, that's where I met my wife, Marie, and all of that. So, yeah, as far as, you know, the kids there and pedagogy and whatnot, I worked at a bilingual school. It was a dual track, English and Arabic.
Okay.
So language arts, science, and math were, and you know, and some of the specialist courses like art or PE, as I said, will be taught in English, and then there's an Arabic track, of course, Arabic, social studies, and religious studies. Okay. Those three are government mandated, and there's a national curriculum there. With the English track curriculum, we used a Common Core language arts and math from the States. Kuwait is a very rich country. It's rich in oil, and so the kids that we're working with and families are working with are, you know, very well to do as well. You know, we worked at a, you know, fairly, I worked at a fairly big school, you know, about 2,000 students, you know, element K to 12 school, and then you know, school grounds are pretty big, but it's, you know, it's fenced and there's, you know, security gates and whatnot. Not that, you know, Kuwait's not safe, just the way the school's structured. And then, so let's say a family of, you know, three or four, with three or four kids enrolled at school, will have three or four different drivers and maids pull up in three or four cars. And then, you know, there's Abdullah at the elementary gate, and then there's Aisha and Muhammad in the back gate where the high school and middle school is. And so we're dealing with you know, things like that. And then when you ask kids, hey, what do you do for summer holidays? Oh, no, we went to a house in France, you know, we went to Maldives, or, you know, so we're dealing with, you know, families that own, you know, telecommunications, with that own airlines, that have, you know, private jets, and, you know, not just, you know, a house or two in Kuwait, but multiple properties, you know, in Europe and Australia and things like that. So, but despite the, you know, the finances, you know, ultimately parents still want the best for the kids.
Yeah.
Right. So their parents still want, you know, the kids to be successful, still want going to go to top tier colleges, you know, in the States and Canada and everywhere else around the world, and all of that. So, you know, the 8 years in Kuwait were fantastic, and obviously, and of course, you know, Kuwait being where it is geographically, you know, it's a short, you know, 5-6 hour flight to Europe, you know, 6-7 hours to most of Asia. So the traveling opportunities were phenomenal as well.
And then you moved to Seoul 6 years ago.
8 years ago, 2014, we are just in the midst of our eighth year here. At a certain point, you know, Kuwait being a, you know, fairly small country, it felt a little, you know, monotonous, and Marie and I felt like it was time to go. And then, so 8 years ago, we came to Seoul, South Korea. We've had a good run here. Seoul International School, a smaller K-12 school, about 800-900 kids, K-12. Fairly homogenous in terms of student population. About 90-95% of the kids are of Korean descent, although they may be passport holders from the States, Canada, Australia, et cetera, et cetera. And all this, and then we have a sprinkling of faculty kids that are, you know, American, Canadian, and Kiwis, and whatnot. And then there's a couple of other expat families in here as well. So it's been 16 years, 8 years in Kuwait, and we're going to finish off our eighth year here in Korea, and we're looking forward to moving on to somewhere else, wherever that may be.
So that's kind of the 8 year stint, and that's, you guys will be ready for a move somewhere else after the.
Yeah. You know, eight years. I mean, I don't want to say 8 years is a long stint, and you know, certainly, you know, international teachers kind of approach it differently. There are some, the typical international teaching contract is for 2 years. And then after the initial 2 year contract, you can renew either a year at a time or a couple of years at a time, et cetera, et cetera. And then some people like to bounce around, you know, every 2 or 3 years just to try out different countries and different areas of the world and whatnot. But constantly moving is taxing, because, you know, you do spend a good, you know, first part of that first year, you know, getting settled and getting things organized and whatnot. And then, you know, I certainly don't want to spend that second year preparing to leave and recruiting and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So you do want to spend some time enjoying the country, enjoying the that part of the world and all that. So maybe eight years is a good chunk, you know, and there are not many 8-year chunks in one's career. So we're very happy with our time here, but you know, it is time to move on.
Mm-hmm. And so the school that you teach at is they don't do bilingual with Korean at all. It's just English.
We're EMS, an English medium school. Everything is taught in English. We use the Common Core as well. Common Core, okay. Language Arts and Math, NGSS, and all that. So, and our being in Korea, our parents have very high expectations of our kids.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we graduate kids to, you know, Ivy League, to, you know, the top tier private colleges and states and whatnot. And, you know, and so our kids are with us, you know, from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. Okay. You know, sometimes they'll stay behind for after school activities or athletics and whatnot. And then, you know, they'll leave campus for good, let's say about 4:35,
mm-hmm.
but then they don't go home. They'll go to Hogwans or academies,
okay.
where they do, you know, math enrichment, English enrichment, you know, SAT prep, debate, or they, you know, go things like, you know, fencing, cello, or what, you know, other, you know, I don't want to sell Hogwans as just a purely academic, you know, pursuit, but, mm-hmm. you know, I think at any time there's, it's more of a focused, very intensive, you know, pursuit of one particular activity, and it could be academic or not. Yeah.
Okay. And so basically a lot of those kids, I would say, since you're saying their parents are very involved, you don't have a lot of discipline issues.
No. And that's the upside of, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. I don't want to say for all international schools, but certainly, yeah. You know, international schools, you know, that I've been in, the kids are very well behaved. They're, mm-hmm. you know, the discipline issues, or, you know, if you even want to call that, is, you know, leaving their jackets on the floor, their lockers, you know, open, or mm-hmm. they're, you know, maybe dilly-dallying in a hallway or bathroom and not getting, yeah. to class on time. You know, certainly, you know, I wouldn't even call them, you know, behavioral issues. They're mm-hmm. just very normal middle school,
yeah.
you know, kind of issues that, you know, that we would get at school or at home. So, mm-hmm. you know, we're very blessed and very fortunate to be able to work with, you know, learners of that caliber. You know, it makes our job easier in a sense. You know, you mm-hmm. don't have to worry about some of the extraneous, you know, stuff. But there's also a certain expectation that, you know, you show up and you're on top of your game for your kids as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. So I was.
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. Explore more podcasts at www.teachbetterpodcastnetwork.com. Now let's get back to the episode.
We're both involved in the 100 Stop series book for teachers, 100 Things All Teachers Should Stop Doing, and that came out in May of 2021. And your chapter was on stop dressing unprofessionally or distastefully. And, mm-hmm. you know, that stood out to me because we both started our career around the same time. And that was something when I even did my student teaching that was very kind of pointed out, really, you know, mm-hmm. In my case, it was like, you know, wear blouses and skirts, right? And mm-hmm. I think it's been kind of, you know, a lot of educators have become a lot more lax with that mm-hmm. professional dress sense. Yeah. So tell me a little bit about kind of some of your thoughts that you write about in the chapter, and then what you kind of have seen evolved, both having worked in Canada, Kuwait, and Korea.
Having been a product of, you know, public school system in Canada, even growing up, you know, I mm-hmm. had teachers that, you know, wore shirt and tie, you know, mm-hmm. you know, maybe a sweater or a shirt underneath. So I grew up with a very Norman Rockwell kind of image of what an educator should look like, you know, mm-hmm. you know. But then that image has fluctuated, I guess, or has evolved as I, you know, not only stepped in the classroom myself, but I've kind of traveled overseas and worked overseas. I mean, ultimately, you know, you do want to present your best self.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's, you know, it's hard to be your best self if what you're wearing is, you know, kind of betrays that mm-hmm. perception or that image that you want to share with your community. I resisted the you know, when I was writing the chapter, I resisted, you know, in providing a checklist. Okay, you know, these are things that you should wear. These are mm-hmm. things you should mm-hmm. not wear. That's mm-hmm. not what the chapter was about. That's not what the book is about, right? That, you know, but what I wanted to emphasize was, you know, this is a conversation or conversations that everyone needs to have with the learning community. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you have to take into social cultural norms and expectations in the place, and that's, you know, coming from, you know, having taught in Kuwait and having to deal with the mm-hmm. norms there, and obviously the geography as well, right? You know, mm-hmm. what's acceptable, what's professional in, let's say, Hawaii, we're very different from what's, you know, professional and acceptable in Norway or Sweden, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. right? And that's just purely based on geography and where you're and latitude and all that. So, you know, and the things that, let's say, not maybe not me, but what Marie, my wife Marie can wear here in South Korea coming to work is very, very different from what she can wear going to work in Kuwait. Mm-hmm. Or maybe, you know, if our next stop is in Saudi Arabia or where, right? Mm-hmm. So there's certain factors that has to come into play. But regardless of those factors, whether it's geography, whether it's, you know, social cultural norms and whatnot, as a learning community, you have to establish some baseline rules, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. right? If, you know, as educators, you know, we want parents, we want kids, we want a community to respect what we do, we have to, you know, respect ourselves, mm-hmm. right? We have to, you know, showcase the profession at its best, mm-hmm. right? There's a reason why doctors walk around in lab coats, right? There's no, you know, tangible function of that lab coat, right? Because certainly when they're in the operating room, they're not wearing a lab coat, mm-hmm. right? But that lab coat affords them the image or the perception of legitimacy, of knowledge, of expertise, mm-hmm. right? And, you know, so we, as educators, we don't have a lab coat to drape over our shoulders, right? We have to do what we can to create that to convey or and to create that sense of legitimacy or and expertise for ourselves, mm-hmm. right? And so, no, you can't wear ratty joggers or a hoodie to, you know, to work on a Tuesday, right? You shouldn't be wearing that you know, that 10, 12-year-old T-shirt, you know, to a staff meeting on a Wednesday morning. It just doesn't sit right with me. Mm-hmm. You know, and you know, and I'm sure there are a lot of people out there saying, well, you know what, you have to be comfortable and all that. Absolutely, mm-hmm. right? Like, especially, you know, Marie teaches the younger kids, right? She is, you know, she's sitting cross-legged. She's sometimes on her knees. She's moving around a lot, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. right? But comfort, you know, doesn't equate to being sloppy.
Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, I urge, you know, educators, I urge communities, schools, you know, districts to really have those conversations, mm-hmm. right? Like, what can we do to uphold the, you know, the standards for ourselves, for our school, for the district, right? What can we do to, you know, put our best foot forward? And this mm-hmm. is just a very simple thing to do, mm-hmm. right? Put on a polo, put on a shirt and tie, right? Whatever your community, dictates is the baseline, mm-hmm. right? So it's, when Rick approached me with the chapter, with the topic, I'm sure that's easy enough. I do this all the time. It's a no-brainer for me now. Every Friday I'll put on a school issued polo, just, school spirit day and all that. And, Christmas I'll have a, ugly sweater and a Santa hat and whatnot. But, besides that, hey, you have to dress the part, you have to dress the part. And, for someone like myself, who's an aspiring leader, mm-hmm. right? There's that saying, right? Dress for the part you want, dress for the role that you want, mm-hmm. right? I can't show recruiters, I can't show, leadership that I'm ready to step into that role if I'm still coming to school in jeans or, and a ratty hoodie. That's just not how it's going to work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that makes me think of Principal Caffelli, and he talks about on his AP Leadership Academy. He's talked about mm-hmm. that some. And, I've worked with teachers before. You can tell kind of who is dressing for the part they want versus who is, dressing like they are going to the gym. Right. Yeah. And, and you might say it has to do with age as well, but I think it's something that learning communities, school leadership, maybe the instructional leadership team of a school mm-hmm. kind of needs to just think about, because we have that code of conduct, the dress code for our students mm-hmm. in the handbook, mm-hmm. but we don't really often talk about the adult dress code because, we assume, they're not going to come with X, Y, and Z on, yeah. but yeah. there are sometimes teachers who do. And a lot of the time the administrators ignore it because they really don't want to address the issue. Yeah. So in your chapter, you write very eloquently, you say, people coming to work in a, Def Leppard hoodie and a 25-year-old Def Leppard hoodie or tattered basketball shorts. So is that something that you experience people coming to work in, at least when you were working in North America? Or is it just something that you've at least heard of? There are people that kind of go to that extreme.
I think it's something that I've witnessed, something I've experienced.
Yeah.
And, it's, I don't want to use the word, frustrating or disappointing.
Yeah.
It's a reflection of reality. Mm-hmm. And like you said, Dana, it's, maybe with everything else that's involved in education, leadership or instructional coaches or districts, maybe just of all the conversations that they need to have, they just don't want to have that conversation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. With international teaching, it's, our faculty manuals, our staff manuals are pretty, pretty well laid out, right? These are things that you shall not wear, mm-hmm. but I imagine, working in a public system, in Canada or in the States, school boards or school districts can't do that, right? Mm-hmm. because, with, involvement of unions and mm-hmm. federations yeah. and all that kind of stuff. So to me, having, when we go to the next school and to receive that faculty or a staff manual and to see that checklist doesn't really faze me. Mm-hmm. Right. It's just, I accept it as part of working internationally. Right. Along with, having a passport, being vaccinated and all mm-hmm. that stuff. It's just another thing, another hoop I have to jump through, if you will. But certainly, if leadership, if stakeholders don't uphold that standard in the public system, if those conversations, those much needed conversations are being pushed off to the side, inevitably there will be erosion of the of educators or the perception of educators, mm-hmm. In parents' mind and students' mind, right? Like mm-hmm. you brought up age earlier in the conversation, right? If if I'm wearing a hoodie and jeans, as let's say a first year, second year teacher, mm-hmm. if I'm wearing a hoodie and jeans, what's separating me from a high school junior or high school senior? Mm-hmm. Right. At best, I may be 5 or 6 years older than they are. Right. So there has to be some sort of, not just, you know, there has to be, you know, that visual difference as well, right? The, mm-hmm. that visual distinction, right? Maybe it's not as much of the case with you know, teaching middle school or elementary school, but certainly, you know, right? If I walk into high school and I'm, you know, I need to separate myself, mm-hmm. right? Not just for the kids, but for faculty as well, for you know, visitors coming into school building, for parents, et cetera, right? So, and one way we do that is by, you know, maybe dressing a little bit more professionally.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's definitely, you know, some good points that you laid out, and we just need to, you know, encourage, I think, those younger teachers as they join the profession to mm-hmm. just set themselves apart from the others. And something you said in the pre-chat was, you know, comparing dressing professionally to a dress rehearsal for a play. Yeah. You know, that it's something that you want to, you know, it's part of the package of being a teacher. Like you said, like you compared it to a doctor. It's, we don't have a uniform, but we don't have to wear a suit and tie every day, but we should wear something that is not like we're going to the gym or we just rolled out of bed.
So, no, for sure. Yeah, yeah, for sure. For sure.
How did the 100 Stop series call come about? You said you're also doing the admin book, and tell me a little bit about what that chapter is. Okay. And you said that has already been written. The book will be out early 2022.
Yeah. So actually my involvement with this series is very fortuitous, you know, serendipitous, you know, mm-hmm. you know, as you know, Dr. Jetta Rick, you know, put a call on Twitter, you know, about last fall, August, maybe September mm-hmm. of 2020. And then, you know, maybe because I have you know, time zone advantage, I was able to catch it on Twitter before, you know, before a lot of other people. Rick and I have no connections. Like mm-hmm. if we walk by each other in the mall, in the streets, or, you know, we're perfect strangers, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And the fact that he's trusting me with the work, he welcomed me on board. There, you know, there's no submission of a writing sample beforehand. You know, beforehand, you know, I you know, shout out to Rick and his crew at Pushing Boundaries, because you know it's you know, I very much appreciate that to include me in the first one, and then in the second one, coming out, like you said, in a few months time, early 2022, 100 things all school leaders should stop doing. And so my chapter for that second book is on indecisiveness, you know, school mm-hmm. leaders that sit on the fence and don't want to make a decision for whatever reason, you know, mm-hmm. Maybe lack of information, just, you know, general indecisiveness or, you know, because they don't want to fear of losing face, you know, and all that. So, you know, I'm thrilled. I'm glad to have been included in the second book. Mm-hmm. And so that'll be hitting the shelves in about 3 months time, hopefully about 3 months time, February 2022.
Yeah, and like you did when the other one came out in May, there'll be a lot of graphics and social media posts and a lot of sharing. So anybody who follows either of us will see a lot of that going around. And do you do any other writing, maybe blog or just educational type writing for articles or journals?
No, actually, and this is why I was so appreciative of Rick and, mm-hmm. and you know, his willingness to let me participate in this endeavor. That, you know, I'm not unlike yourself, unlike a lot of the other contributing authors. I'm not a consultant. I don't have existing work for Rick to refer to. You know, this is my first piece of, you know, published work. So, No. So I guess, you know, I don't have I don't have a podcast. I don't have a blog or anything like that. So to be involved with this was humbling and very, very rewarding, because I, you know, through this, I've had opportunities to connect with, you know, consultants and edu leaders and thinkers such as yourself and some mm-hmm. of the other contributing authors in the series.
Yeah, it definitely opens doors when you get involved with something in a large mm-hmm. project like that. And now, you know, there's some authors like yourself who are on both books, and, you know, so there's a set of new authors though for the second book. And mm-hmm. and so, yeah, it's like, you know, the Edu Twitter just, it keeps growing with those connections, even though you are on the other side of the world.
You know, it's just, I mean, at one point I said to Maria, you know what, it almost doesn't matter that if the book never sees the light of day. I think just the fact to be embraced with open arms and to be trusted with the work and, you know, mm-hmm. and, you know, not have anything, you know, for Rick to refer to, you know, just to be, you know, to be welcomed and, you know, have my voice heard. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. That was such a big thing for me, such a positive thing for me last year. You know, maybe it's with, you know, with the pandemic, and, you know, we have a young toddler at home, and so it was a much needed outlet, you know, for me personally, and, you know, I was thrilled to be involved in that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad that you were on the list, and, you know, that I came across that, mm-hmm. you know, reading the book as well, and excited for the release of the next one. So mm-hmm. out of everything we talked about today on the podcast, what's one thing you'd like listeners to remember?
Be your best self mm-hmm. every single day, right? Be your best self, and do that first thing when you wake up, when you mm-hmm. put on, when you make that decision as to what you're going to wear to work.
Yeah.
Okay. Because, you know, 22 years in, lessons bomb. I'm going to tell you now, right? It doesn't matter how long you've been doing this, lessons will bomb.
Yeah.
Right. Lessons will not go to, no, you can be, you know, it's just not going to work. Right. There are lessons, and some days are going to be really, really good, but there's some days that are not going to be that great. But you know what? It's so much easier to deal with those not so great days when you're dressed well, mm-hmm. when you can look yourself in the mirror and say, hey, you know what? I didn't have a good day today, but I'm still pretty darn good at what I do. Mm-hmm. And so when I wake up tomorrow, I'm going to come back, I'm going to knock it out of the park. Mm-hmm. Right. And having that positivity, that image reflected to you in the mirror is so important, mm-hmm. right? People don't come, you know, you come into education because you want to impact students, you want to make mm-hmm. a difference, you know, and it's not, you know, it is a profession that's, you know, easily trampled on by mm-hmm. people that are not involved in it, by people that are outside of it, that don't know, you know, the blood, sweat, and tears that goes into it. Right. Mm-hmm. So don't give them another reason to knock you down a notch. Right. Don't give them reason. Hey, you know, what is this guy doing? What is she doing? Why is she dressed like she's going to the mall? Right. Do yourself a favor. Dress the part. You'll feel better for it. The kids will feel better for it. The parents will feel better. Like it lifts the image or the culture of the whole community. And, you know, you owe it to yourself. You owe it to your students, you owe it to your profession.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that is so great. And that just makes you think, like, you want to take pride in what you do. Right?
Absolutely.
So look the part.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, where can people connect with you and find you online?
Well, I'm on Twitter, Mr. Tong SIS. And then I'm on Instagram as well, Mr. Tong SIS. And I have a website for recruiting purposes, but, you know, your audience don't need to know that. But just on Twitter, connect through you, connect through the hashtag 100 Stop Series. But, you know, pick up the book, right? And then the blue one for school leaders is coming out in about 3 months' time. Look for that in Amazon or Barnes & Noble, your local bookstore. But yeah, I'm sure we'll be, you'll see a lot of this coming across your Twitter feed in the next few months.
Right. Well, thank you so much for being on the Out of the Trenches podcast today. It was a pleasure talking with you.
No, thank you, Dana. I do want to say sincerely, thank you for the opportunity to not only connect with you, but with your audience as well.
Check out the show notes on danagoodyear.com to learn more about this guest and links to their social media. Please subscribe, share, rate, and review wherever you download this podcast. Tell your friends and colleagues about it. And if this episode resonates, especially with you, be sure to share it out on social media and tag me at Out of Trenches PC.